Hello, friends, and welcome to the Hope Canteen Podcast, where we look at a reading for the upcoming Sunday for insight into our walk with Christ. This is our 19th podcast. My name is Stephen London, pastor at St. Thomas Anglican Church. And as always, I am joined by Stephanie London, priest in the diocese. And I have to say, I'm very excited to welcome a new guest to our show. His name is Tim Chesterton, the rector of St. Margaret's Anglican Church on the south side of Edmonton, and a really good friend to both of us. So it's really great to have you on our show, Tim. How are you today?
I'm about 70%, I think.
Okay. Tim is struggling with a little bit of a cold or something, so I hope you get better soon. How about you,
Stephanie? That's what my grandfather always used to say. He always used to kind of give a percentage number for how well he was.
So. Oh, okay.
Well, there could be a lot worse than 70.
I know.
How about you, Stephanie? How are you?
Good. Yeah, we're actually going to brave a restaurant tonight and celebrate our anniversary. So I'm looking forward to that, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. I think for me, things are pretty normal. I think what I'm most excited about is we are looking at upgrading in the church, getting some cameras and stuff. And I actually didn't know how excited I would be to do all of that research. It's actually a whole new ball game. And Stephanie's brother actually is helping me with that. So I'm actually finding that pretty interesting. So for the people at St. Thomas, look out for new stuff. For our podcast this week, we are looking at one of the great stories of an encounter with a living God. If you would like to read the story before you listen to the podcast, you can pause the podcast here. We are looking at Exodus, which is the second book in the Bible, chapter 3, verses 1 through 15. And this is the great story of Moses meeting God at the burning bush. When we meet Moses in chapter 3, I don't think of him as that great venerated prophet that we see in Deuteronomy. Rather, this is a much younger man. He had everything. He lost everything. And now he seems to be trying to make a new life for himself. He had been born a Hebrew slave, raised with the best education in the ancient world at the time. And then because one day he defends a Hebrew slave, and in so doing kills an Egyptian, he is on the run. He finds himself in the wilderness where he finds a young woman and has an opportunity to help her out. She just happens to be the daughter of the priest of Midian. He marries this young woman, has a son. He settles down to a new life as a shepherd when one day he sees a burning bush. He turns aside to see this sight, and in the bush he encounters no less than the creator of heaven and earth. And God gives him quite the task. Go tell Pharaoh to let the Israelites go. Well, Moses is not very excited about this prospect, but this is one of the classic stories in the Bible. There is a lot here to look at, and I am so happy that Stephanie and Tim are here to help us figure out what this is all about. So I'm just curious, as you read the story for this week and reflected on it, what did you find interesting?
Well, Moses has a lot of baggage coming into this story. And I've got to think that he probably thinks his life with Egypt is done. And really what it turns into, or what it turns out to be, is the thing that starts the whole story in motion. And this is a story that is foundational for the rest of Israelite history, and also for us as Christians. Like this, the story that comes out of this, the Exodus, this is the beginning of it.
Yeah, that's actually a helpful way to put it, Steph. I never thought about that. But yeah, he probably actually at this point never assumed he was going back.
Yeah, he was just going to go and watch the sheep and that was it.
I find it interesting the way that this story, I mean, I kind of lay it alongside the story of the conversion of Saul in the book of Acts, you know, and I find it interesting the way that we tend to read those stories is that we tend to read the story of the conversion of Saul as a conversion story rather than a story of a call to mission. But in fact, when you read the story of the conversion of Saul, it is a call to mission even more than it is a conversion story. I think the opposite is true here, that people tend to read this as being like Moses' call to mission without realizing that we have no record of any encounter that Moses had with the living God before this point. You know, as far as we know, this is the first time he's had anything like a personal encounter with the living God. Of course, those kind of personal encounters were maybe a little more rare in those days. Still, that's foundational for everything that comes afterwards. I mean, Moses can speak about God because he's met God, you know. And the other thing that kind of strikes me about this story is how rarely in the Old Testament people seem to seek an encounter with God. You know, I mean, God usually seeks them. They don't seek God.
Yeah, that's
you know? Actually and, really in, and in fact, they sort of, in a sense, they're also, God is such a scary figure that they would almost rather not have an encounter with God, you know. And we see that at the mountain, don't we, in the, a few chapters further on, where the people see God on the mountain and say, no, no, Moses, you go talk to him. Mm. we'll stay down here where it's safe, right? So
you've already seen the fire of God and survived it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it seems like as far as the Old Testament authors are concerned, we don't have to worry about God not being able to get through to us when he wants to. If God wants to get through to us, he's quite able to
yes.
do it.
Yeah. And in really surprising ways, too, like this burning bush that obviously yeah. is enough to pique Moses' curiosity so that he actually turned aside. Mm-hmm. But it's not the way that people were expecting God to show up.
Yeah, I actually find that curiosity really interesting. At least as I read the text, it actually makes it seem like Moses had the opportunity to walk by. It didn't mm-hmm. seem to be calling out until he's made this decision, I will go over and see this strange sight. Why is this bush mm-hmm. not burning up? And you wonder how human history would have been different had Moses just kept going.
It's interesting what you the detail that you talked about him, settling down for life as a shepherd. I don't know why I had missed that before. that the two great leaders in the history of Israel, Moses and David, right? Both have this sort of shepherding kind of background to them, which, you know, in some ways you would say is probably the quintessential foundation for their ministry as leaders, right? I don't know why I hadn't picked that up with Moses before.
Well, I'm making a big assumption. It doesn't say he settled down, but I think he, mm-hmm. it sounded like he had a pretty good gig, you know, mm-hmm. with Jethro, the priest of Midian. I always find it interesting also about this idea of taking off your sandals. It's not actually a theme that comes up very often that I can mm-hmm. recall. This seems to be the only place, but there does seem to be this, it does seem to have a resonance of what holiness is, right? That God mm-hmm. is a holy God, that this is holy ground where Moses finds himself. And I'm taking it that the taking off your sandals is a sign of respect and humility to stand in front of this God.
Yeah, as it is in Islam today, right?
Is that right? I don't know, actually.
I think, yeah, I mean, you can't wear shoes inside a mosque, right?
Right, it's probably the same.
Take your shoes off, yeah, yeah. Unless Moses was just a sort of a proto-North American. We take our shoes off at any time and go into a house, right?
I wouldn't say that's North American, that's Canadian. I never did that in the U.S.
Yeah, it's another interesting question, this idea of the holy ground. It's not that Moses is going to a place that essentially holy. It says in verse 1 that he's leading his flock beyond the wilderness, and he comes to Horeb, which is like desolate wilderness, and the holy ground is the place where God shows up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important point to bring out, that God's presence is what makes this holy ground.
Yeah. Rather than the other way around, mm-hmm. right? It's not that God shows up there because it's holy ground. Mm-hmm. It's that God shows up there and therefore...
It's holy ground.
It's holy ground, right? Yeah, every place can be
And there's an invitation to Moses to respond, even in this mm-hmm. small way of taking his shoes off. Mm-hmm. There's some kind of preparation, in a sense, not that it happens beforehand, but a preparation to meet God. Mm. Some kind of action that allows him to draw. Mm-hmm.
What some of our listeners may not know, it's kind of interesting because sometimes there's two words for the same thing, and Horeb and Mount Sinai turn out to be the same place. And just so we realize that there's actually a full circle that happens, this place of Mount Sinai. So God meets Moses in this burning bush, and then he goes to Egypt, and we'll read about this over the next few weeks, brings the Israelites back to the same mountain. And when they come back, though, it's not just a burning bush. In Exodus 19, it's a burning mountain. It's even bigger, but it's the same place. The Israelites come to the same place, and I find that really interesting.
Mm. It's interesting, too, that that's one of the signs that God gives Moses. I'm looking at verse 12. Moses says, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? And how God answers that is, when you've brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Mm. So that full circle is sort of a proof of who God says he is.
Mm. That's the sign, and it will eventually be fulfilled, yeah.
Made me think of the story of Jacob, where he has his encounter with God and then puts the rock up as a memorial. I was thinking, why didn't Moses put up a rock? But then I thought, oh, yeah, there's a mountain.
There is a rock.
There is a rock.
Easy to remember, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I always assume, you know, if you've learned how to be a shepherd and you're on the land, I have to assume at that point you're pretty tough. You're living outdoors in a way that I've never lived outdoors. So I'm guessing you have a pretty good sense of the lay of the land and how it all works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when I lived in the Northwest Territories, I was just blown away by the people that were traveling on the land all the time. And to me, it looked like a trackless wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew exactly where they were.
Mm-hmm.
Just a familiarity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing in this reading that I find really interesting, I'm always impressed by God being a God of relationship, and we call this relationship a covenant. And so God makes these promises hundreds of years before Moses to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that he takes a lot of time. That's an interesting question that I have no answer to, why it takes so much time. But that God here sees himself fulfilling the promise to these three patriarchs of the ancient Israelites coming to Moses. And that's how he introduces himself. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.
In a sense, because you know that relationship, you should recognize the God who is in that relationship.
Do you think Moses knew those names? Or do you think those names, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, were new to him with this? Or were they familiar names?
I have always assumed that he knew them. But I realize when you ask that question that I have no reason for that assumption.
Well, I just wonder if the Israelites are in slavery for 430 years, have they lost the story? I mean, at what point did they stop telling the story? I don't know if they did or not. It doesn't say. Mm.
And what prompted Moses in the previous chapter to suddenly identify himself as an Israelite after having been brought up in the court of Pharaoh for all of that time, right? We just don't know. Like, did he suddenly rediscover his Israelite identity or what?
Was it something in that incident where he kills the Egyptian and starts to identify with his own people? Or?
Or did he always know? I mean, was it something that his mother acted as his nurse, right, when he was growing up? So did he always did he have that secret knowledge that those are things we can't really know.
I wonder if she taught him songs or something to kind of stick it in there somewhere deep where he might remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a hero in this story, isn't she? She doesn't get much space, but she's a bit of a hero in the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I assume, when she was nursing him, and obviously she knew that he was her child, that she sang to him, but who knows how long the contact was.
I want to go back to this name of God, I am, because it's something that Jesus comes back to as a way to say who he is, particularly in the Gospel of John. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on this name of God, this way of God identifying God's self.
I think what I find interesting about it is, up to this point, my understanding is God has used names that named attributes of God as his name. So El Shaddai is God Almighty, but that says about his power. And El Halom, right? God of eternity, or the eternal God. Like, these are all attributes, but this is different. This has no attributes. I am who I am.
I think it's a name that is a no name.
Which means?
Well, I mean, it's basically saying, well, I am who I am. That's the only thing I can say about myself, you know. There's no word that's adequate to describe all the fullness of God. Every name that you could possibly pick will describe a little bit of God, but not the fullness of God. So,
you know, I always assumed, Tim, I love that insight, because I think, if my understanding of the ancient world is right, that names actually are a little different than we use names. We use names as a bit of an arbitrary tag. But I think in the ancient world, names were actually supposed to capture something of the essence of a person. And if you're right with that, Tim, God's basically saying, you guys can't capture me.
No, that's right. Which is why you can't make idols, right? Because idols are, there's no such thing as an adequate image of the eternal God.
And if you had to attach something to this unimageable nature of God, it would be being itself and presence itself.
We're going to get all philosophical now. I can.
I was going to say, that's very Greek. I don't know if that's the Exodus. But I like the idea that here I am. It's me, but you'll never know who I am. But let me give you a promise. I will be with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that idea that God makes these promises that just stay true. I will be with you.
Well, and that's actually included in the possibilities for the translation too, isn't it? I mean, like, it could be translated, I am who I am, but it can also be translated, I will be what I will be. Mm-hmm. So there's a future kind of element to it as well.
I like all this list of things that God says to Moses that reveal God's nature, not just in the name, but in how God is acting towards God's people. I have seen their suffering. I have heard their cry. I know their sufferings. I have come to deliver them. I have seen how they're oppressed. Even if God is ultimately unknowable, we know that there's an element of care and love in God, and that God is not going to let his people be lost.
And that's justice, isn't it? Right? God is going to set things right.
And like you said before, it takes a long time. But that doesn't mean that the promise is gone. In fact, it's about to be fulfilled in a really, really dramatic way.
Yes. And we'll continue to talk about that as we go through these podcasts. As we come to the end of this podcast, I'm just curious, what do you all take from this reading that people might take with them as they meditate on this passage?
I remember years ago hearing somebody, I can't remember who it was, give a sermon on this passage. Or maybe it was a talk to a bunch of clergy, and the question he left us with was, what was the burning bush that God used to get your attention? And I loved that question because, you know, when I was 13 years old, when I started, the thing that first got my attention in terms of the gospel was a book by Dennis Bennett called 9 o'clock in the Morning, which was a book about, you know, the Pentecostal movement and spiritual revival and experience of the Holy Spirit. And it had a flame on the front of it. the front cover looked like a burning bush. And I thought, well, yeah, God can use anything to get our attention, right? But that was the thing that God used to get my attention, because it was a story about possibilities in relationship with God that I had never thought were possibilities outside the pages of the Bible. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess that's what I often ask people now is like, what's your burning bush? Like, what is it that God used to get your attention? And as you said, Steve, you might have gone by.
Right.
You didn't, right? You turned off. And then something came of that.
And you stopped. I love that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think for me, it's this promise again that he said to Moses. And I think this comes up again and again in the scriptures. I will be with you. One of the things I love about I have a study Bible called the Renovare Spiritual Formation Study Bible. And its whole theme that drives it together is it's called the with God life, this promise that God is with us in all kinds of different situations. And I try to, in a sense, warm myself at the flame of that promise every day. To me, I love that idea of preaching the gospel to yourself every day. And this is one of the truths that I use to carry me through.
Yeah, for me, I come back to the holy ground. And I think it's particularly important in the middle of a quarantine to know that God isn't bound to the church building, but wherever God is, that's holy ground. If I'm sitting in my house and I haven't left for 13 and a half days, or if I'm in a hospital bed, or wherever I am, that's holy ground. If the presence of God is there, then it's holy.
That's a great place to end. Thank you, Stephanie. Well, thank you all so much for listening to our podcast. As always, we really enjoy making this, and we're grateful for you listening. If you have any thoughts, and actually if you would even be willing to share where you do or did find your burning bush, we would love to hear that. Just write me at revstevelondon@gmail.com. Until next week, we will see you later.
Bye.
Bye.